part of what divining what's going on at the Court of Criminal Appeals, particularly as it particularly with respect to Article 1107 writs and mandamus cases, for you and for most of us, the only thing to really know if you're in this business and if you're filing writs, you've got to look at the hand down every week. You've got to look, pay close attention to who's dissenting, who's concurring, and what the court is doing, because a lot goes on and there's a lot of information in the hand down if you know what to look at. Look at the remand orders. Look at the any orders that they have. If you're in the 1107 business, I would read those and I would pay attention to who is where, who's joining what. That's really the only way to know what they're thinking. And ultimately, anything that you do, even if it's in the trial court with a trial court judge, who we often call the habeas judge, you're talking to them and you're talking to the opposing parties, but you're always talking to the nine judges and their staff and central staff. So pay attention to where they are. Know your audience. What else is going on at the Court of Criminal Appeals? My paper was last updated, it says so, in it, I think it was probably early May or late April, the one that you've got. At that time, there were seven pending, filed, and set cases. One of those was resolved. It's a very exciting case that I'm not going to talk about because it doesn't apply to most of you. It involves the way TDC was dealing with people who had stacked sentences and were eligible for mandatory supervision. So that case is gone in a big win for inmates about something that they've been fighting about for a long time. So now there's probably six pending, file, and set cases. But an interesting thing has happened. If you look at these things in the extraordinary writ world, there's been an equal amount, if not a preponderance, of mandamus decisions. And that's kind of what's driving the actual opinions that are being decided. There's more of that going on than actual Article 1107 cases that are being filed and set for actual opinions. The mandamus docket has been busy, and there's lots of interesting stuff on that. So I hope that you paid good attention yesterday to the excellent mandamus talk, because that's a growing part of our criminal practice. Something that I always used to say, but it's been reinforced to me lately, is that 1107 work on the ground requires lots of time and energy. Writ counsel, if you're filing these things, you have to do, in my judgment, everything that we expect Sixth Amendment trial counsel to do and a little bit more. You've got to reinvestigate the case, look into the trial lawyer's investigation, go into school stuff, family stuff, prosecutor files, read the trial record, all of that stuff. It takes a huge amount of energy to discover a huge amount of information and distill that down into whatever claims there may be, and that's become very apparent to me now. And it's an analogy I always use, but I'm more and more convinced that it's right, is it's like if you're filing these on behalf of an applicant, you have to think of yourself as a trial lawyer doing plaintiff's work. There's no other really analog in the criminal justice litigation framework, because that's what you're doing. You're filing a lawsuit against the conviction, and you have to go through mountains of stuff to do that. And like Dean Burnett said, or suggested yesterday, it may be that just like you're supposed to, they say, start your trial prep by drafting the jury charge, maybe you should start your preparation of a writ by writing out the findings of fact that you need to win, and let that guide what you do. But all of that work still just boils down to usually a simple legal test. Usually it's a two-pronged test, whether it's Strickland or Brady or actual innocence. It's pretty simple in the end. Okay, let's talk about habeas corpus. I think that we all know what it is, but it's complicated, isn't it? The Texas court system is complicated, and the way that habeas corpus goes through our system makes things confusing. The bottom line from jolly old England, it's the legal tool to challenge the jailer's authority to restrain someone. You've got me. Tell the judge, justify that to the judge. If you can't justify it, cut me loose. So that basic principle goes through our criminal justice system from before even a charging instrument all the way through post-conviction litigation. But that's what we're here to talk about, post-conviction collateral attacks. So the constitutional habeas corpus authority and the statutory habeas authority gets carved up into all these little situations. And we're talking about post-conviction felony habeas corpus. Why? Because that's the strangest creature that there is, but also because it drives most of the opinions from the court and the case law that is developed in Article 1107 and death cases, 1107-1 cases, informs writ practice across the board. For Article 1107, we have a bifurcated system that you have to understand. These cases are filed and mostly litigated in the court of conviction. The trial judge makes recommendations, findings of fact. And then the Court of Criminal Appeals makes the ultimate decision. They are, as we talked about yesterday, the ultimate fact finder. But they're certainly guided by the trial court's findings and recommendations. And if you are litigating one of these things, you definitely would rather have the trial court on your side than not.